You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hey, Chris, what are you drinking there?
Oh, you never seen one of these before?
No, what is that?
Oh, man, this is brewery in Austin, Circle Brewing. They're right near my house, right up on Breaker Road. They got their own brewery with a bunch of stuff. This is actually, you're gonna think I'm lying. This is, I think, the best American Hefeweizen I've ever had, Circle Brew.
Get out.
It's made in America. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's high praise coming from you.
Well, take a sip of this thing. Try that.
All right, let me see.
No. That wasn't the Hefeweizen. That was the IPA.
Yeah, no, that was
fantastic.
The Ladybird.
Yeah, that's good, too. Man, they make a lot of good beers. And like I said, you can come visit them at their tap room right down the street here from me on Breaker Lane. It's delicious stuff, and they actually became the sponsor for the website, oneofus.net.
Wow, good guys, and they live right down the street from here?
They certainly do, and you can even get their beer in convenience stores now.
Ah, convenience store. I'm going to just walk over to Circle.
Les, is there anything worse than a show that almost was good?
No. Honestly, I bad shows slip from my memory, but shows that have all the pieces out and just don't assemble them correctly become these infuriating things that actually get me, like, yelling at the TV.
Yeah, and I'm so conflicted because I've been so back and forth between various episodes, between various scenes, and while I'm going to say this up front, I think these are two of the better episodes of this whole show, it's still didn't really amount to much at the end of this, you know?
If anything, the swing widened between the this is good, this is frustrating, and by these episodes, we were veering between, I think episode 5 had a scene that just infuriated me, followed by some really great moments where I was like, okay, suddenly we're a good show again, but because I know you did this badly earlier, this is not paying off the way that this good scene should pay off.
Yeah. So for people who are listening, we kind of held off, one, because lack of motivation to finish these episodes, but two, the final episode is premiering the day this review comes out, and we wanted to at least give you a little bit of a heads up on what to expect, so we can't fully spoil, unfortunately, but I think, honestly, if you know the story of George Hodel, you know he doesn't die at the end of this. Let me just say that.
That's the thing. I'd already read this at the first episode, but I re-Wikipedia'd this watching the last episode of, like, when does George Hodel die? Oh, the 90s.
Yeah.
Like 1999. Like, he made it to Prince's year.
Yeah. No, and that's such a bummer. Like, you know, and that's the thing. Obviously, I say we won't spoil, but it's just the things that I feel like actually worked this episode. First of all, these episodes were directed by Carl Franklin, who's a veteran TV director. And honestly, is it bad to say that, you know, just in the context where it's like, oh, well, we had two female directors and the male directors, and I feel like the male director directed the best episodes of the show, just unfortunately.
I felt like, for me, 3 and 4 were the best episodes of the show, and I don't know that it owed to the directing so much as, I don't know who wrote episode 5, but they were, I both didn't like the dialogue of the writing, like I didn't like the actual writing, but also I felt 5 was saddled with exposition to explain the poor plot threading of episodes 1 through 4.
Yeah, well, actually, it's funny because that's the only episode not written by Sam Sheridan. It's Monica Beletsky who wrote that one.
Okay.
So, yeah, of course, the one episode that really infuriated you is the one that was not written by the actual series writer.
And it's only because it is saddled with a couple of just insane exposition scenes where you realize that not only is a character getting far more stuff told to them than shown, but it also becomes insane that the character receiving the info doesn't know a lick of this yet.
Yeah, because,
like, not even a hint. When this should have been the central plot of the show, like, the fact that they've not been doling out this information and it gets proven expressly in a scene in episode 5 kind of summed up, like, oh, it's not just me. You guys really have been poorly threading it. What they decided the show was about was Chris Pine and all of this Dahlia, George Hodel stuff. And like we've been saying all along, it's just not the A plot. It simply isn't. Everything they keep relegating to C, like B and C plots, like the stuff with Fauna and her mom, those are the moments that become the giant emotional payoffs in EP6. But there's not the scaffolding to support it.
Yeah.
Because they've been doling them to these, like, background things. I mean, when stuff happens with Fauna's adoptive mom at the end of episode 5 very suddenly, it should have meant more to me. And I'm like, you've only been in 3 scenes and you've just yelled at the child.
Yeah, no, that's the thing that didn't really work, is the way they wanted us to... Yeah, again, not spoiling much, but they tried to expect a character flip with Fauna's, you know, the adopted mother. And
they even tried to seal the deal with, like, a touching handhold scene at the end of Ep 6. And I'm like, but you've not given me what this scene needs to build on.
Well, it's because the other stuff that they show, they expected us, like, well, see, it got so much worse when she wasn't around, so now she realizes how much better it is when she was with her mother. But it's like, after that first episode where she berates her and tells her how awful she is, it's like, oh, you're just a biracial child. You know what it means to be a black woman. It's just...
If anything, them needing that turn to happen of, like you said, you know, it was so much worse, and now Fauna will realize that her adoptive mother was not the awful woman that, you know, the harpy that you thought you were being raised by. That, to me, was always what was frustrating every single episode, was the story here to me is this orphan girl growing up in a mixed race house, like, as a mixed race girl, and all of the problems that this time period and that identity brings to her and to her mother raising her, which is just a deeply interesting setup for me. And then her discovering, oh my God, I'm adopted. Oh my God, my parents are like Daddy Warbucks, basically. And then finding out that, like, no, your parents aren't Daddy Warbucks. Your parents are insane 50s serial killer crazy rich.
Yeah.
And like, that slow twisting would have been an absolutely engrossing show for me. And all of those elements are laying there, relegated to these very, very background plots while I watch Chris Pine have PTSD and Leland Orser play a role that I'm still really kind of unclear on.
Yeah, I feel so bad for that dude. Like, they literally only bring him in just to move the plot when necessary. Just like, okay, here's Leland Orser, and bye.
And then they give me a wrap-up shot of him, like, reading a newspaper in episode 6, and I'm like, but toward, like, what is he learning? What are we realizing? Like, you haven't set up shit for this.
Yeah, also, I feel like they shot all of Leland Orser's scenes in, like, a few days in the same location, because did we ever see him anywhere outside the restaurant?
No, I think he's always in that restaurant, like a mobster working or something. just about. I think he's in a bar one time, but... Or maybe the bar of that restaurant, now that I think about it.
Yeah, like literally, like, he's only there for Chris Pine to show up again and go, hey, I need some stuff. Okay, I'll get you your stuff. Yeah. Okay, bye. That's.
There was a moment at the end of episode 2 where, like, alone in a room watching this show, I actually said out loud, man, this show. And it was, like, right at the end of episode 2, and then episode 3 starts in with that suddenly, like, Hannibal stylish setup. And I was like, what? Do you guys know what show... It's like every once in a while they were losing faith that their show was interesting, and they just kept trying, like, well, veer towards the Dahlia. This will get them back. And, like, no, you're just undercutting your whole show every step of the way. Episode 5, when... The discussion between Fauna and another character, where just that exposition scene I was talking about,
yep.
Trying to not spoil this. It was so much info dump so fast on a character that, like, I'm sitting there going, holy crap, you don't know this? Like, and then they do, like, the most world's most obvious musical synth sting. and I, like, I looked at my wife and went, that sound right there, that is putting it together sound. Like, that's math. Like, apparently that is the noise that math makes in that girl's head. but then they undercut it completely when she shows up in episode 6 and goes to the... She goes back to the hotels for something in episode 6.
Yeah, that did not make any sense.
Based on the revelation at the end of Ep 5, you wouldn't even be on this block without a freaking pistol.
Yeah, you know, and maybe I was a little presumptuous to say these are the best episodes. I only say that these were the episodes where the most stuff that was actually plot relevant happened.
The most exciting, yeah. I kept watching these going... This is moving towards a resolution. I don't know how, because I know how this ends. I mean, at least the part y'all are focusing on is the A plot. I know that this man survives and you do not catch him. You do not prove he's the Dahlia. Jay does not get anything done about this. I knew these facts going into episode 1.
Yeah.
And to see them still aim towards it, I had a little moment of like, I'm going to get the Inglourious Basterds ending here.
No, there was a point where I felt like, oh, wow, show, you are going to be very bold if you're going to straight up lie to me about a scene that's going to happen here. And they didn't do it.
Yes.
But.
Yes. But there was a moment where Fauna hugs Jay and I was like, oh, my God, are we just off script now? Did you just kill him?
Yeah, that would have been weird. You know, and that's the thing. It's just that The pacing, at least, of these episodes should have been the entire show, because we spent so much time just languishing on that art scene thing that we had in the fourth episode where she goes to the art show for the grandmother and all the other stuff. I'm like, why did we even bother? Because that stuff meant nothing.
No, and EP6 really did just some serious work on doing the heavy lifting for making those scenes matter, but like, or trying to pay them off somehow. Because like episode 6, one of the great barbs that Fauna gets to throw is basically a callback to that art scene of like, that art scene is better than anything you've done, and it hits home with the character, you know, with Hodel, just a little more of a sting than anybody's gotten on. And I was like, okay, well, that's cool, that pays that scene off. Still, that was a lot of screen time to devote to basically a burn.
Yeah, and also the fact too,
and a burn that involved the word shit more than Fauna said it the entire show so far.
Yeah, that was really, really out of
her
character.
Her language jumped a decade for me. Like her language moved to like an 80s, 90s. She sounded modern suddenly and not of the 50s. And maybe that's my misunderstanding of how much people swore during the Watts riots, but
well, and that's the weird thing, too, where, you know, just a minor detail that the Watts riots happened at some point in this, because there's, you know, history is occurring around them. And that seems to, I mean, I know it's not supposed to come out of nowhere, but after all the stuff that was happening there, I'm just like, oh, yeah, that is something that's going on in this story.
It really, yeah, and because it really, so many things, I never felt like there was a background thing happening, like they were slowly building me towards understanding that the Watts riots are about to happen or are happening, because at least four of the ongoing plots of this show constantly feel background.
Yep.
And like, I've spent so much of this show never sure of who the main character was, because it really should be the story of Fauna, and she is kept completely ignorant. And instead, I feel like I got a miniseries about outsiders looking in on the story that I'm ostensibly watching.
Yeah, it's so disappointing with this. And, you know, that's also saying that there is still some of the good stuff from the first, you know, four episodes happening here. Like, I gotta say this, that I think this is one of the best performances Chris Pine has ever done.
He is really exceptional in this. A lot of the cast, everybody's doing really good work. The evil stepsister, I'm blanking on the actress's name.
Stepsister.
Connie.
The step-grandmother. Yeah. Connie Nielsen.
Connie Nielsen. Yeah. She does really, I mean, she is exactly in her wheelhouse for this role. Like, cold, crazy, artsy bitch is just perfect. But she just owns that. And the guy that plays Hodel is great.
Oh, yeah. Jefferson Mays.
Though I did have a moment, I think it was in starting episode five, where I went, I kind of want a sci-fi or genre comic or something where somebody puts together like the greatest criminal minds of all time as like a supervillain team. And it just turns out to be five phenomenally inept psychopaths who are not good at hiding anything. They just happen to be white and in a business suit in their time.
Yeah, because
so like George Hodel has creep rolling off him in waves, and no one can stick anything to him because he lives in a period of time where, you know, like the, I think there's a Brooklyn Nine-Nine bit where Andy Samberg is crawling into Joe Trujillo's like apartment window with a hockey mask on, and a cop's like, "Hey there, pranking my friend, sounds fun," and he just keeps going, you know, like the cops just wave him off like, "Oh, you hijinking kids," and like looking at George Hodel, that's all I kept thinking about was like, man, I don't think you're a super genius Moriarty. I think you're just rich and white in exactly the right moment in history, which is pretty much most moments of history. But like, it just kept cracking me up of like, man, I don't think you're Patrick Bateman slick at this or anything. Like, I think you're just rich enough in L.A. at the right time.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is that they never, you know, again, with the heavy lifting, they tried so hard to make George Hodel a threat again at some point, when you realize that he's never really been a threat this entire show. Like that, like we said, Sepp, the henchman dude, was way more a threat because he actually did stuff, you know, for most of it.
Yeah, and they took him out of the running so relatively early compared to anything. I mean, they eliminated their one physical threat, really. Like, after that, I was more scared of gangs catching them with Pine and a mixed race girl.
Yeah, no, actually, you know what? That's the weird thing is that, though, again, clearly this show is selling on the Black Dahlia stuff, but the racial tension things, I had more tension with that than anything else at all in the story.
And it made me really wish that it had been the forefront of the story and let all of these other things complicate what was, you know, what's a straightforward but complex and heavy story for this girl. And it would have been very interesting to me to watch this already complex, like, hey, I'm already trying to navigate my identity and racial politics in this period of time in America and my adopt, you know, and finding out my parents aren't my parents, and then complicate it with, like, a reporter rolling in saying, oh, yeah, your dad and your granddad are probably the same dude, and he's probably the Dahlia killer.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is that, again, there's that one scene that I'm pretty sure I know which scene you're talking about that infuriated you. Also really undercuts the points they're trying to make with the racial storyline, because when you find out stuff about those details, and then also when you know that the actress herself is biracial, and then when you know these details, you're like, well, but then that kind of ruins everything that you were talking about up to that point, show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was always going to be complex to cast an actress who could play what was going to be the eventual reveal, which again, it's based on a true story, so you can Wikipedia this, that Fauna Hodel had this mixed race parentage that was a lie, that her father's not Negro, and
well, so she, there you go. No, I guess history is a spoiler, guys, everybody.
Yeah, I'm sorry to spoil that for
I think the spoiler stuff,
like,
is for
Wikipedia,
the fictional
totally spoils this. It was always going to be a problem to cast somebody that was going to play with the audience's expectation of that and not give the game away too early. But again, I can't believe how much I feel like they avoided this incredibly intriguing storyline for me of her dealing with this. They only had a couple of scenes, I feel like, in the first episode or two where Patty Jenkins was directing, where they had other girls her age giving her kind of bullying crap about her race and her skin tone.
Yeah. No.
And I kind of wanted to see... I became really thrilled that I was about to see a story where this girl kind of discovers her out and then discovers that her out is way worse.
Yeah.
That, you know, hey, here's this other society that is so much worse.
Well, and also one thing I really didn't like about this show was the way they kept trying to slam us with the whole Chris Pine hallucinations detail, where it's like, oh yeah, he's picturing all the people he's killed in the war and all this stuff.
Yeah, and then we add people to it, and
because that's never been they hinted at details of that, but it's so inconsistent at what things he's seeing or what kind of PTSD he's suffering from that it never amounted to anything in the show.
No, it never felt like it always just felt like somebody came up with a cool, clever visual way that they wanted to show PTSD,
yeah,
but which didn't really deepen my knowledge or understanding of PTSD. Or I think the one time that I enjoyed it at all, he's sleeping in the back of a car, and another character comes out of their motel room because he's screaming in the car.
Well, and that's the thing, is that one has nothing to do with any of these after a certain point. It's not about those crazy hallucinations. It's just a honest scene of discussing PTSD trauma, you know, and it was genuinely affecting at that point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, when he dives to the ground under the table with Orser in the restaurant at one point, and then snaps. This really was a fantastic performance from Chris Pine, who I have just loved since Smoking Aces. He can always just do a more interesting, broader turn than the pretty boy that I feel like he could have just been constantly casting.
Yeah, and I mean, he clearly had some involvement in this, because I believe him and Jenkins were main producers with their production company on this. So they especially had an investment to make him a spotlight in the show. And
I feel like if
that's just be the point.
I feel like if I were just generally more into true crime, forensics type stuff, serial killer lore, this show had enough that was still appealing to me as is, that I think it would have been much, much better for me if I had a background interest. You know, the way that I will sit through some genre stuff that's maybe a little below par simply because I love spaceships or love dragons. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Sure. But I feel like at the same time, this show doesn't really cater well to those people, because one, it's incredibly straightforward with the way it presents certain details. Like, you know, they keep trying to do, like, red herrings and mysteries, but there's never any mystery. And the way they discover the clues, it's like, oh, look, like you said, you know, Creeper just happens to leave out his creepy evidence everywhere. So it's not even all that compelling as a mystery, because we're just waiting for the ending to happen up to that point, you know?
I want to know if... it's a bit of a spoiler, but or maybe, I don't know. The very end, more or less, when Pine bursts into a room and starts destroying paintings.
Oh, yeah, that bit, yeah.
And he's, you know, he's doing it because he's so enraged that, like, no, you won't get away. You can't, you know, you can't just get away. And I'm thinking, well, it's a good thing nobody's destroying, like, a room full of evidence.
Yeah, you know, you'd think that, I mean, I guess they're trying to sell the idea of, like, well, no matter what happens, he was boned at that point, so it wouldn't matter if he presented evidence, but.
Yeah, and Pine's way out of control, but I was just like, oh, man, could you not?
Yeah,
I mean, previously you set out all the paintings and you took pictures of them, and this time you're flipping out. I know it's supposed to be a character break, but I was like, Jesus, stop destroying evidence, man.
Yeah, but then the other problem is just that, you know, along with this stuff, because we don't have a definitive answer, we don't know if George Hodel actually is the Black Dahlia killer.
No.
So that's the problem, is that all this evidence feels like artistic representation of what might be.
Oh,
no,
yeah,
clues.
They make it so clear. I mean, he is, as far as this show is concerned, he is 100% the Dahlia killer and simply went uncaught.
Yeah.
And that might be true. But you definitely lost some true story bona fides by laying it so clearly out there like that.
And that's just the problem, that again, this is inspired by the story, and they just went, okay, so this sounds like it could be a really interesting story, so let's just decide that it is the truth. And I don't know, it's hard to make a story like this where they don't answer a story, you know, don't give a definitive answer. Because, I mean, again, Zodiac tried to do the same thing, and the biggest problem is that when they tried to name, like, oh yeah, well, clearly this dude was the Zodiac killer, new evidence came out that said that's probably not true. So you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't in these kind of cases. So
I feel like they would have serviced themselves a lot better by focusing on the incest trial and the possible, I don't know if Tamara was actually, is that her mother's name?
Yeah, Tamara.
I don't know if she was actually this with it, and this is her reasoning for why she put mixed race on the birth certificate, but I thought it was an absolutely fantastic story. If they had focused on the birth of this child after that incest trial and the clear implication of what that means, which we watched Fauna do that math. I know so because it had a music stand. and this idea that started to form in my mind that, oh my God, the best inheritance, the nicest thing, and maybe the only kind thing Tamara's ever done for you as your mother is do something that made your aristocratic family send you away.
Yeah. No, I think
by lying on that birth certificate, I was like, that's brilliant. Like if she had started picking it, like, oh my God, my parents are Daddy Warbucks, but why would they have sent me away? And then to realize, like, oh, it's because my father/grandfather might be an absolutely horrible nut, but nobody's really sure of it except this clearly broken reporter. And like all of that would have added beautifully, and all of that was on the table, just jumbled up like Gabola spaghetti.
Yeah, it felt like they were just they wanted so much to bounce back and forth between the plots that they ended up really not amounting to anything singularly strong in the end. So,
and I'm only talking about it this long because there was so much good woven through there.
Yeah, no, like there's individual scenes that work well, it's all shot well, it's all produced well, it's all acted well. It's just that structurally and in terms of the strength of the dialogue, like you're saying, it's just not there. It's just not quite there. So I don't know if there's much else.
I feel like anybody watching it who really digs it, I think is going to keep pausing it and or keep turning away and looking up real info on it and then getting more and more frustrated.
Yeah, no,
but I think you'll come away fascinated, but maybe more frustrated.
Yeah, because that's the thing is that I actually got a little bored even with some of these more exciting parts where I'm just like, okay, I know this isn't leading anywhere because I want to just look up the details and go, but wait, that never happened, or, oh, no, wait, but that technically this part happened, but this part didn't happen.
Yeah,
so
picking it apart became more interesting than trying to follow what they were doing.
Yeah, and that's just...
Because like you said, the tension just wasn't laid out the way they thought it was.
No. So, I don't know, is there anything else really to say outside of these details we've said, or...
No, I wouldn't have finished it if I wasn't reviewing it.
Yeah, no, same here.
I feel bad saying that. It's so well produced.
Yeah, and that thing's like...
It just did not grab me.
I feel like this is kind of the... I mean, because I never actually saw the show, but The Alienist, it feels like... These sound like the complaints people had with The Alienist, where they're like, it's a...
Same. I did not watch it, but the same complaints that, like, I want to love this. Everything's on the table that I love.
Yeah. So I think let's... I mean, I'll just say that I think people may appreciate it come, like, maybe Emmy season, saying, like, yeah, there's some strong acting and some strong production values, but I think this is a show that's not essential viewing at all. So if I was to give this a final rating, I would give it I think, yeah, overall as a season, I would give it like 6 out of 10. Very gropey sailors.
Yeah, I would say about the same. 6 out of 10 ham-fisted portraits of dead people.
Yeah, that was, again, those whole things where it feels like one of those like Nancy Drew mysteries, just like, oh, the killer was here kind of thing. So it's just,
yeah, oh my God, Pine running back with like, I've got proof. No, you don't. You have pictures of people who have been in the paper.
Also,
because they're dead.
Also, I'm sorry, just I'm going to say the context, Buzz, but it was like, you knew that was a trap coming up there, right? There was a trap.
Oh my God.
Clearly laid out that Chris Pine, sure, I mean, I'm figuring he knew it was a trap, and yet still.
You know he knew because he made her stay outside.
Yeah.
He at least had a hunch that it was a trap. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff where I'm like, I know you think that was a clever blind alley, but it's not.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, again, talking about this show is more fun than actually watching it. But thank you, Les,
agreed,
for actually being on this review with me. So.
Yeah. It was kind of nice knowing, like, well, Justin's sitting through this too. I'm genuinely interested to hear if he yelled at the screen right then as well.
Yeah, and I've heard how you've been torturing the guys at the Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast with that Six Dream Samurai movie, so.
Oh, yeah, best feral kid since Mad Max.
No, but.
maybe the best feral kid since Shane.
Well, so last thing then, since we're all done with the Sparta Review, would you like to promote your your podcast for the people listening?
Sure. I'm usually on the TV Dudes, but I can also be found on the Good Die Young, which is thegooddieyoungtv.com, and season 2 of that will be forthcoming here shortly. And then, I pop up on a decent amount of Netflix and Kill and Yu-Gi-Oh! Type stuff, as well as some reviews and interviews over on thatsmyentertainment.com.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, thank you all for listening, and I know we do have at least 2 other TV shows that people are kind of like picking around to review, and we'll see if those are better than this one. So, all right, until next time, everybody. See ya.